This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
All right, in a couple of minutes, we are going to check in with Dr. Rick. In fact, he says, he just texted me, 1 minute here, Dr. Rick. We're going to give the number to Plowsy, who's got great speed. He's going to go in the other room and get him on the radio as we speak. But before we do that, I do want to tell you about one of our fine sponsors of this program, the Bomarito Automotive Family. If you're looking for a car, look no further than Bomarito. Go to bomarito.com for more information. They sell more cars than any place in the state of Missouri. Yes, they do. Any car dealership in the state of Missouri, they've done it for 10 straight years. The Bomarito Automotive Family. They have 20 new car locations. They have 10 pre-owned car locations. They will get it done for you. We're thrilled that they are with us on the press box.
And very timely for Dr. Rick to talk about the Hicks injury. I guess we haven't been told a definitive reading from the team. We'll get that today, an update on Hicks. But I think you also saw on Twitter Hicks's mom saying, "This too shall pass." Like, everybody knows.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad news. And the only question is really, and something Dr. Rick could answer, is time frame. Some people have done a quicker return from Tommy John, but traditionally I think you would say it's at least a year. And let's bring in Dr. Rick.
Dr. Rick, good to be with you. How are you, sir? Is Dr. Rick with us?
Oh.
Yes.
Plowsy's doing the job of 18 people and lifting weights.
All right, Dr. Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm good, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Very good. Just some quick questions right off the bat, so our listening audience has a real good idea. If it's a full tear, what is the time that he'll be out roughly?
Probably somewhere between 9 to 12 months. So if he's got a full thickness, ulnar collateral ligament tear, Tommy John tear, he'll have a full reconstruction, and he'll miss every bit of a year. Nine, it could be 10 months, but probably a year.
What's the success rate of Tommy John surgery here in 2019?
Probably 92-93%. It's been a phenomenal operation. You know, the rehab is long, but the athletes have done well. They come back throwing pretty close to where they left, and in a year they're throwing usually either a little better or where they left. So very, very successful.
I think the immediate reaction from a lot of folks was, well, he throws so hard, it was inevitable. Is that actual science, that he would have at some point blown the elbow out because he throws that hard?
I think guys that throw over 100, and, you know, I haven't had a ton. I probably have 8 or 9 in my practice, and there's not that many out there, have almost across the board at some point had medial elbow problems. So I think if you're throwing 90, 92, your chances of having Tommy John are probably 25-30% at a high level. I think if you're throwing 100, I think that number probably goes up to 60%. So I would say it was, you know, not 100% inevitable, but pretty almost inevitable that sooner or later he was going to have some ulnar collateral ligament issue. So, yes.
So how long does this new tendon last? Because he's only 22 years old.
Well, we used to see recurrent tears pretty frequently. So we went through a period of about 5 or 6 years, 7 years, where we were doing a lot of redo Tommy John surgeries. I actually started using a bigger ligament, which I think has helped. Some people say it doesn't. I believe it's helped. And I think some of the augments that we're using this fiber tape to augment the ligament, makes the ligament a lot stronger. So I can't remember the last time I've seen a re-tear. So I think the chances with good conventional surgery today are much, much better than they were even 5 or 6 years ago in terms of him not having another surgery.
And what happens if, maybe not just in this instance, but in general, if somebody has a slight tear of the UCL, what's the recovery time there?
Well, then you do this internal bridge, and it's probably about 3 months. It's a repair, and you put this fiber tape stuff in, and it's probably about 3 months, 4 months at the most. And someone who's going to throw 100, you have to do something to make the repair stronger. So this fiber tape, it's 2 millimeters, it's collagen dipped, and you literally could pull 2 semi-tractor trailers with this stuff. So that's going to make the repair much stronger. And if he has a partial tear, there's no reason he couldn't have an internal bridge and be back throwing like he's throwing 3-4 months.
But how often are there things called partial tears? When you hear it's a UCL turn, a tear, how often is it a partial?
Probably 15%.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think expecting the worst at this point is probably fair. And again, it's a guy who throws hard, and I think they've tried to manage his innings over the last year and a half. Is there anything you can do to avoid it? I mean, in terms of blame, is there any to pass around?
Well, you know, I always tell coaches and trainers and athletes and agents, you maximally stress the ulnar collateral ligament with every pitch. So every pitch over about 80 miles an hour, it's getting stressed at 100%. So the answer to your question is, other than pitch count, which I think they've done a really good job, you know, it's wear and tear. If you drive your car 100,000 miles, your tires are going to wear out. So this is a situation where, again, you asked the right question, is it inevitable? And sooner or later, you know, the weak link is the UCL. So I don't really think there's blame to go around. And I think that, you know, if you're going to throw 100, 102 day after day, your tires are going to wear out.
Well, he's had a couple of extended relief appearances. Could that have been a factor?
That could be a factor because, you know, they call them pressure pitches. And clearly he's in a position where most of his pitches are pressure pitches. So that's one thing. And a guy like that's not cut out to pitch 2-3 innings. So if you're going to leave him in there a while, you do run a risk that he's going to overload his elbow. Now, this looked like it was one throw. Thought it was his triceps. We've all heard the story, and you know, I was watching the game, and I looked at that and I said, "If that's triceps, I'd be shocked because you don't see triceps very much in relief pitchers. You always think the worst. He walked off, and then it was the worst. But in my opinion, an extended outing a couple times could overload the ligament and then lead to failure."
What do you think's fair in terms of the criticism of how the Cardinals announce these things? Because when injuries happen, there tends to be, and I'm sure it's not just here, but it feels like there's an overly optimistic review, and then a couple days later, it's the devastating news. How much of that is they just don't know when it happens? Like on Saturday, by Monday, you've had the MRI. What's fair, do you think, and what should they be saying?
Well, I mean, there's two schools of thought. I don't think anyone should say anything. I think until there's a firm diagnosis and they come to the final decision, I don't think there should be any media release. So, you know, I know when I get called by the papers and we're in the middle of the workup, I try to say, I say, well, we just don't have an answer yet, because just for that reason, because, you know, on first blush, he's got adrenaline going, he gets examined, the trainer examines him, he hasn't really had the MRI, hasn't had the full workup. So now you're trying to predict the end of the football game at halftime, and I think that's always fraught with mistakes. I've been doing this a long time. I talk to a lot of agents, and they'll call and they'll say, "What do you think?" And I'll say, "Well, I haven't really had a chance to work the guy up completely." And they always want to know on your exam, on first blush, what is it? And that's, you know, you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. So I think the way they do it, coming out with an early answer, is always going to be optimistic because they don't want to freak anybody out. The flip side of the coin is then they look like they've kind of deceived you, because then they come out and say, "Oh, it's torn," and everybody, you know, has the wind taken out of them. So I think the way they handle it is not correct. I think they shouldn't say anything until they have a final resolution and they say, "Look, we're still working them up," and that's a viable answer, because it leads to this up and down. The other thing is, once the doctor sees him, he has a pretty good idea, then, you know, you might want to make a preliminary statement, but then that's always going to be the true answer. And I think that's what's going to happen. So, again, I think they need to change your protocol, because this always happens, and they always look dumb coming out and saying everything's fine, and then it's like disaster.
Couple of quick non-Jordan Hicks items before we let you go. Major study debunks myth that moderate drinking can be healthy.
Yeah, you know, this it's, the study said glass of wine at night is good. A little bit of low, moderate drinking is healthy, good for your heart. And now they do this massive study, and they said, you know, one drink is one drink bad, and 10 drinks are 10 drinks bad, and, you know, it's all bad. Now, I don't know that I 100% believe that. I think a little bit of drinking, I don't think it really affects you, good or bad. But I also think that it does tell you that you probably want to diminish, you know, if you're having a drink a night or a glass of wine a night, it's probably not a problem. But again, this study pretty much tells you, you know, over excessive drinking is definitely not very good for you.
I would say if you're going to drink, maybe you should stick to wine and then just take a look at Dick Vermeil, who I think is, what, 83, 84?
Yeah.
Looks like he's about 62.
No, no doubt. And you know, the French have done this for years and have unbelievable low incidence of cardio problems. So, again, you know, their hearts are healthy and they all drink a little bit of wine. But I think that, you know, wine is different than going out there and having six bourbons or something. And I think you have to try to keep, you know, if you're drinking wine and you're drinking a glass or two a night, again, you're not drinking excessively, you're not going out on the weekends, you know, and drinking a handle of something, I think you're probably going to be all right.
Final thought. This is for Martin because he's the only one with young kids doing this program. Three bad habits parents should avoid doing in front of their kids.
Right. And, you know, this is just logical, right? You shouldn't smoke. You don't want to scream at each other, and you don't want to drink. So your kids are going to emulate and do the things that you do, right? I mean, that's just the way it always looks. They look like you. They talk like you. And they're going to do what you do. And they're going to take on your mannerisms. So when they see you screaming at your spouse or screaming at people, you know, they're going to emulate that. And the studies are all clear. Your chances of having a son or a daughter smoke, if you smoke, go through the roof versus if you don't smoke. And then, of course, drinking is the same thing. And I see a lot of families where, you know, every night get back to drinking, you know, people drink excessively. Don't be freaked out if your kid drinks excessively because, you know, they're just emulating your behavior.
Dr. Rick, I have to admit, I've only yelled at my son on occasions when he'd knock over my drink and it spilled onto my cigarettes, okay? So otherwise, I would never yell at him.
Well played. Dr. Rick, good stuff. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, what do we have coming up in the coveted hour?
Coveted hour today. We're going to actually talk to Rick Kornfeld, who is one of the money that's done the PSL deal with the Rams. We'll talk to Rick Kornfeld, one of the attorneys involved with that case. Also, Tuesdays with Kenny Wallace coming your way at 12:30. The Midday Grind on deck.